Okay, so let's do a visual chart if we could. So if along the x-axis or the horizontal axis is year and health of the river, has it been a bell shape? In other words, were there years in the 90s, for instance, that it did get much better, or has it been a continual decline over the years?
So the Patuxent lawsuits that ended up in front of a very famous judge, Judge Sirica of Watergate fame, was the judge officiated over the South County lawsuits back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
Out of that came a settlement. This case did not go to final judgment. The settlement was an outgrowth of something called the Patuxent Charrettes that brought together people from all over the watershed, from industry, from government, from the science community, and they came up with a plan, and this was during the Hughes administration in the state of Maryland.
Okay.
They came up with a plan where the state would regulate the upstream wastewater treatment plants. Mm-hmm. And what's happened in intervening years, even though water quality substantially improved immediately thereafter,
okay,
we now have these other forces like rampant growth, runoff from parking lots,
yes,
construction debris, things like that pouring into the northern end of the watershed. We're basically urbanizing the northern part of the watershed.
Yes.
One of the disparities is that Southern Maryland has no wastewater treatment plants that discharge into the Patuxent River.
Mm-hmm.
They discharge into some other rivers, you know, but most of the discharge from wastewater plants comes from the northern counties, Howard County in particular, Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and that while we're regulating these plants and upgrading them, we're increasing their efficiency, we're also adding more loading to them. So in a sense, these flush fees, as people call them, they're actually providing kind of a bridge to additional urbanization of these resources. So we're transferring loading from that pipe to other inputs, right? There's runoff again from parking lots, from land. It's like we're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. We're not working the big problem, which is there's a finite capacity. And I don't know if I have the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. Where do you start eliminating people? Well, I don't know that that's really, that's a dead end, no pun intended, but...
All right, so if you could, you had a magic wand, and you could regulate one source of pollution, whether it's urbanization in terms of development and, you know, surface becoming much more impermeable, or waste treatment plants, or where what would be your number one... with your magic wand, I can fix this. That would have the greatest impact on the river.
That would be the so-called non-point source pollution,
okay,
which is about 70% of what's currently slamming the Patuxent water quality. And that's mostly, I won't just say it's construction, it's also the drainage that runs over land from urban surfaces, parking lots, pavements, storm drains, gutters, things like that.
Yes.
So to that extent, it's true, stuff that people do on their home lot, like rain gardens and rain barrels, can certainly help. But we have wholesale pollution. I think of that as retail pollution. The wholesale pollution comes from these massive ground disturbances, these massive projects.
Okay.
You know, pick an easy target. I mean, on the Potomac side is National Harbor.
Yes.
Right. You've got this massive construction right in inches, literally right on the waterfront. If you go just downstream of National Harbor, you can see the trash that has accumulated on the point at Fort Washington that runs off of there.
Okay.
And it's not just the trash, but it's also the sediment, and it's the toxins that come across macadam and asphalt. You know, the ethyl methyl bad stuff, the stuff that'll hurt you even though you never see it coming, that you can't measure it easily.
Right.
You can't smell it, you can't see it. So that's, to me, it's the non-point source. We're doing very, very little about that. Stormwater, basically.
Okay, so our outgoing governor has implemented a rain tax, although, as I think we all know, the terrible name. But it deals with discharges and the like. Do you think that this is, you know, generating money in this manner is going to really have an impact on the Patuxent River?
I don't believe that it will, for a number of reasons. For one, I don't believe that it's equitable. But I don't think the answer is necessarily to eliminate it. Something obviously has to be done.
Right.
The problem is we haven't changed the design culture. If we simply are trying to fix something after it's broken by retrofitting, we're not dealing at all with the wave of new stuff being built right. every single day that right. is a contributor. It's almost though, like we're trying to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. Well, you always fall down when you're trying to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to do both. We need to find an economic solution to how to retrofit these streams.
Okay.
But we also have to stop wrecking them. It's also inequitable because the burden fees largely go on the public treasury. Mm-hmm. Where, and that's why I don't think this legislation okay. was fought by industry. Why should they care if we get to pay for each other? Stormwater problem. Mm-hmm. They being the construction industry, gets to sell their liability, right? At the end of the day, they sell what they've built to someone who will then pay rain taxes in perpetuity.
Oh, yes.
I don't know that that's putting an equitable burden on the folks who help create these problems and institutionalize these mm-hmm. problems. I think if developers knew and felt they had to pony up their share, mm-hmm. then I think that would have the effect of changing the design culture. They'd build better because they want to reduce, right, the impervious surfaces in yes. those places where... But we haven't right. created that. The environmental committee has been patting itself on the back. Well, we got something passed. Right. We got something passed that wasn't proportional. We'll now be having these street fights to the end of time about who gets favored okay. with a rain tax bounty. Mm. I assure you it'll be people with the most power and political influence and mm-hmm. the richest neighborhoods, not where the worst problems are, mm-hmm. because, right, those problems are beyond investment in some cases. The money doesn't go nearly as far in a ghetto as it does someplace else right. where things are conditions are quite good, right? We're fixing green fields, not brown fields.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some public policy maneuvering I think we need to do to improve, to right size the rain tax so A, it's proportional,
okay,
and B, it's likely to yield some beneficial impact that we can measure,
mm-hmm.
in my view.
So obviously the amount of imperviable surfaces is critically important. But are some of the practices being used as they construct these facilities, whether it's a factory, whether it's a home, you know, housing development, does that contribute also to the pollution? Is it just the construction approaches?
The construction certainly does. And one of the reasons it's difficult to enforce these construction violations is that by the time you can actually drag them into court, often mm-hmm. the site has stabilized,
okay.
right? The developer goes in with the bulldozers and they tear up the ground and they're trying to get the maximum yield. And eventually they're going to plant grass or sod and the entire thing's going to stabilize. Mm-hmm. So citizens start kicking up a fuss the moment they start seeing mud and sediment rolling into the nearby creek. They can't get their sailboats up the creek, right? Mm-hmm. Values being stripped away from the people in the immediate vicinity who own. The developer whose focus is largely not to protect the environment, but to maximize yield.
Mm-hmm.
And so they often have a cookie-cutter approach to how to most use every available or prime portion of a lot.
Mm.
The Stormwater Act that's currently in force, I was one of the architects of that, and mm-hmm. frankly, we stole it from New Jersey. Oh. Oddly enough, New Jersey has one of the most progressive
really?
Stormwater rules in America.
Interesting.
Largely because it's a very densely populated place.
Right.
They had an outgoing governor who left under a scandal, and so he signed pretty much anything they stuck on his
McGreevy?
Desk. I believe it might have been, actually.
I was there at the time. He was yeah. a wonderful governor. He had some personal issues,
yeah, yeah.
but he did
That's
some
true.
Good things.
So he signed into law one of the most progressive stormwater acts in the nation
okay.
that even got litigated in New Jersey to the highest court in Jersey and uh-huh. was upheld by the New
wow.
Jersey Supreme Court. So here in Maryland, we still have this weird tension between builders and investors trying to maximize their yield.
Yes.
And a portion, I think, of the environmental community that's eager to see these guys make money because they want them to donate to ecologically friendly causes.
Yes.
But the sad truth is, you're not going to make the same profit margin mm-hmm. from an ecologically friendly development than you will from one that just blasts all the trees off the site
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
completely reformulates right. the lot. So we've created, I think, poor expectations in the sense that, you know what I mean, we need to right-size these profits. I'm not against profit. I'm not mm-hmm. an activist who's anti people making money,
mm-hmm.
but I'm very much for making money in sustainable ways.
Certainly, and not destroying the environment.
Not destroying the environment in the process.
Now, I don't want to get you in trouble, Fred, but, you know, just down the river, Dominion had a project, has a project. Were you engaged in that? Were you able to work with Dominion in terms of how they design it? What was the role Did you have a role in that?
So Patuxent Riverkeeper listened to the citizens, our members, who are in Calvert County,
yes.
many of whom were inflamed by the lack of transparency in how Dominion created its business deal with the county. There were some serious problems in the disclosures that were provided by Dominion. For example, they inverted the financial model. The economic benefit to the county turned out to be fairly low because most of the jobs that they were projecting were jobs that were not available, job descriptions, job categories, mm-hmm. not available in Calvert and not likely to move to Calvert for the duration of a 3-year construction project. Mm-hmm. So that inversion, which Dominion was fully aware of, a local economist stepped up and said, hey, you know, you guys have the numbers all backwards. Mm-hmm. This isn't worth nearly as much to the county in terms of economic benefit or its citizens. And they just kept forging forward. The impacts on the Patuxent with that 165-foot pier at the base of the Johnson Bridge, mm-hmm. We think is hard on the local oyster culture, mm-hmm. hard on recreational boating. I really believe that Dominion bought the county. They actually entered into a transaction where the county commissioners signed documents, they said publicly, where they could not disclose to the people who elected them what was in those documents. Mm-hmm. These were behind closed doors transactions.
Now, so it sounds like you played a role in the whole process then.
I tried pretty hard to play a role that empowered, that stepped up the game for citizen involvement and citizen oversight. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually get into the yes or no, we should or shouldn't build it, because I didn't think it was up to us to make that call.
Okay.
I thought if this was a really great project on merit,
mm-hmm.
people could draw that conclusion for themselves or not, if they had the information. But mm-hmm. the problem was getting the right information mm-hmm. in front of the public, where the local papers weren't really doing much coverage. Dominion was passing out free money left and right to every environmental group in the county, practically.
Mm-hmm.
And citizens thought it was inevitable. And so they weren't looking at the merits at mm-hmm. all, or its impacts.
We're running out of time, unfortunately, but one last question. Are you optimistic about the future of the Patuxent River?
I am optimistic on most days. There are certainly dark days when I look out my office window and I just think, gee, I wonder if I'll be able to walk over to Calvert County because the river will be filled in with all the sediment mm-hmm. someday. And then I kind of shake my head and, you know, click my heels 3 times and say, you know, I wouldn't be in this work if I weren't fundamentally optimistic
yes.
about the power of people
mm-hmm.
and their love of things that are right and that are good.
Mm-hmm.
And if we plug into that, if we harness that energy, surely we can get something done. We must.
Mm. Well said. Thank you. Fred, is there a website or is there a way that people can contact you if they'd like to work with you and work, you know, with the organization?
We're very accessible, easy to find on the web or on the phone listings, www.paxriverkeeper.org, or just put us in Google, Patuxent Riverkeeper. We're the only one.
Excellent. Well, we are out of time. Fred Tuttman, thank you so much for being a guest on the show, and thanks for what you're doing. Our Patuxent River Keeper is with me this morning, and I hope you'll reach out to the website and reach out to Fred and his organization. It is such a wonderful resource that all of us benefit from, so thank you so much. I'd also like to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, and I hope you'll join me next week for another edition of Southern Maryland Perspectives. Until that time, I'm Brad Gottfried, President of the College of Southern Maryland.